When Christian Herter was governor of Massachusetts, he was running hard for a second term in office. One day, after a busy morning pacing votes and no lunch, he arrived at a church barbecue. It was late afternoon and Herter was famished. As Herter moved down the serving line, he held out his plate to the woman serving chicken, and she put a piece on his plate and turned to the next person in line. "Excuse me," Governor Herter said, "do you mind if I have another piece of chicken?" "Sorry," the woman told him, "I'm supposed to give one piece of chicken to each person."
"But I'm starving," the governor said.
"Sorry," the woman said again, "only one to a customer." Now, Governor Herter was a modest and relatively unassuming man, but he decided that this would be a good time maybe to throw a little bit of his weight around. "Do you know who I am?" he said. "I am the governor of this state." "Do you know who I am?" the woman asked. "I'm the lady in charge of the chicken." "Move along, mister." Now, that's a cute story, right? It illustrates wonderfully two very different kinds of power. Governor Herter had a great deal of official power. He could make all sorts of things happen at a state political level. And yet, at that moment, the lady in charge of the chicken had more power than he did. And when he tried to exert his power, she exerted hers and stood up to him. So power is not, and so I was glad, can we just use this? Thanks. Power is not something we often talk about, and so I was glad we picked it as a theme to explore together this year. There are all kinds of power out there, right? The power to give us, given to us by roles like teacher or minister or governor, or the lady in charge of the chicken. All of those different roles, as varied as they are, give people in them power by the very nature of the role. And then there's informal power, too. Take our church, for example. As the minister, I have a certain amount of power, and members of the Board of Trustees also have power in our church system. Committee chairs, maybe a little bit less than the board, and then staff members also have a different kind of power, right? But these, again, are all formal positions or roles of power. There are also members and friends of our congregation who have what could be called informal power, whether it's because they've shown themselves to be particularly wise and thoughtful during their times as member and friends, or maybe because they've been here a long time and know a lot of people, or because they're charismatic. There are certainly members and friends of our church who are not currently in formal positions of power, who have significant informal power. And speaking of charisma, personal power is a very real thing, right? I'm sure we've all seen this in effect at different times. Maybe some of us, like I did, saw this when you see a teacher come into a classroom and assume responsibility for a class. Mine was in eighth grade, my English teacher, Ms. Pronowitz. She had absolute control over that classroom. Now, she didn't have to yell or scream. She didn't have to send kids to the principal's office. She was just in charge, and every kid in that room knew it. The few times she was out sick, the classroom was nowhere near as well behaved. And there were a couple of kids in that particular class who I knew from other classes, math, social studies, science, and they were troublemakers. And they were frequently talking and causing disruptions with the other teachers, not with Mrs. Pronowitz. It was the quietest class in my day, every day. That woman had personal power and authority. Now, last week's sermon was in large part about personal power, right? Maria, the nun turned governess in the movie The Sound of Music. She had no training or expertise in the role she was thrust into as governess, but she used her own personal power to transform the family system created by the over-controlling Captain Von Trapp, and she helped transform it into one where joy, play, and music were welcomed and affirmed. So, we have formal power, informal power, personal power, and I'd be willing to bet that if we put a flip chart up here and we all did some brainstorming together, that we could come up with many, many other different kinds of power. Power in so many ways defines how the world works, how each and every situation works. I'm going to overuse the word work here, but if you go to work, when you go to work, unless you're a CEO or director, usually someone has power over you, right? And then even CEOs and directors usually have a board of trustees that they have to report to. At school, teachers have a lot of power in individual classrooms, but principals and vice principals have larger power within the system. Of course, police have lots of power in our communities, as does local government.
And government in general has the power to create laws that impact our day-to-day lives, even control who we're married to or not, among many, many other things. So power is really everywhere in our daily lives, impacting us in so many ways. So it's really curious to me then, why don't we talk about power very much? I wonder if it's because we have a tendency to view power negatively. Most of us are probably familiar with the old saying from Lord Acton, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. I wonder if that saying, as well as so many of the negative experiences with power being used against us individually and collectively in so many ways, I wonder if that's shaped the narrative that we have often, that power is a bad thing. Because the reality is that just like any tool, say a hammer, its power is neither good nor bad. It's all in how it's used. Power can be used for good. Whether it's a teacher controlling a classroom so that learning can happen, or a church taking a stand and doing work on a social justice issue, or the Supreme Court of the United States making marriage equality the law of the land, power can be, and often is, used for good. It's the intention we set when we're using the power, and how we choose to use it, that defines whether power is well or poorly used. Now, this is sort of a no-brainer in some senses, right? I mean, power used for good is a good thing, but it's worth lifting up because we too often don't use the power we have for good. Because one of the things that happens when we don't talk about power and how to claim it in our lives and our communities is that we can forget that we have it. One of the key components of most community organizing is helping groups of people reclaim their power. The Youth Activists Toolkit states, organizing is the process of building power as a group and using this power to create positive changes in our lives. And one of the strategies to help do that is by naming and talking about how power and influence work, and even creating a map laying out what you know in terms of the power in the system you're trying to change. In other words, doing a power analysis. Now, we have some myths about power that get in our way, right? And one of those is that we sometimes believe or support, when we don't talk about power, sometimes we believe and support that there's a finite or a fixed amount of power available, and that if I'm going to claim some amount of power for myself, that means there's less power for you. To the contrary, Unitarian Universalist minister Reverend Marilyn Sewell offers in her essay on power and the growing church, when you own your own power, you encourage others to own theirs. Far from keeping others from power, you invite others into power. Some people will be intimidated by leaders who stand in their own power. Those fearful folks will throw stones from the sidelines because they will not, for whatever reason, be able to accept the invitation into a larger life. She concludes, but owning power, if it is to be given to the larger good, is the spiritually healthy way to go. So let's not hold back. Let's claim our own power and help each other claim our own power so that we can work together to make a difference. Another myth around use of power is that there is limited kinds of power in any given situation, or that one kind of power, such as violence or military strength, can only be defeated by a larger amount of the same kind of power. A great example of military power being overcome by a very different kind of power is offered by Vern Huffman in The Impossible Will Take a Little While. He shares the story of the native citizens, or some of the native citizens of northern Rhodesia, who were facing British imperialism in the mid-1900s. After several months of increasing tensions between the British colonists and the local residents, the British government decided to send in a particularly tough administrator to try and bring things back to order. This harsh and disciplined man was greeted at the Lusaka airport by quite a surprise, however. Julia Chikamanenga had organized a group of the biggest women she could find to meet the new man in charge. And so his first view of his new home was of a vast sea of naked Zambian women singing songs of greeting. He turned around, got back on the plane, and flew home to London. Now, that strategy wasn't guaranteed to work, of course, but they tried it, and it did. And the point, as seems especially relevant, given that the Trump administration has a Republican-controlled Congress enabling it to use the power of the United States government in ways that are troubling at best and horrifying at worst, the point is that we have the power that we can use to make a difference. One example, the power of phone calls. Some staff members from liberal members of Congress have put together a guide called Indivisible that shares the most effective ways to get the attention of your members of Congress, the representative from your house, from the House, from your district, and your senators. One thing they highlight is that emails and form letters are unlikely to get your senators and representatives' attention. It's actually much more effective to make phone calls or show up at in-person events such as listening town halls. Now, many folks have taken this phone call advice to heart, and CNN reported that the Senate alone this week has received in excess of 1.5 million calls per day this week. Right? And that's not 1.5 million calls for the week. That's 1.5 million calls per day. This prompted Senator Brian Schatz, a Democratic senator from Hawaii, to tweet, "The last 3 days have been the busiest in Capitol switchboard history by almost double. This is working. Keep it up." Now, I am super, super glad we're making a difference. For example, Senator Lisa Murkowski from Alaska specifically cited hearing from thousands of Alaskans when asked why she had decided to vote against Secretary of Education nominee Betsy DeVos. This is clearly having an effect, right? And I have the office numbers for Luke Messer and Joe Donnelly and Todd Young in my contacts in my phone now so that I can call them regularly. But there's part of me that wonders, why is this only becoming public knowledge now? Why didn't we claim this part of our power, our voice, much, much earlier? I mean, I understand being galvanized into action by what's happening in our country now, but I kind of wish we'd done it earlier. And I sure hope that we never take a step back, that whatever positions we support on different bills or nominees for cabinet positions or whatever the issue of the day is, that we don't stop engaging and making our voices heard. Because while showing up naked and singing songs to Senator Todd Young is likely to make him run and hide in his office, it's probably not going to change his vote. But organizing might influence him. Calling his office every day and sharing your position might influence him. Showing up at town halls, it might make a difference. Representative Susan Brooks surely noticed the close to 200 people who flooded her town hall meeting in Anderson yesterday. We have an increasing understanding and awareness of what the effective tools are. Let's use them. Let's claim our power. As we celebrate Black History Month this month, we need not look far back into our history to see the power organizing has, the power we have collectively to come together to create change and transformation. The story of Rosa Parks is one such story. The thing is that we're often misled in our grade school and high school history lessons, and indeed still in what's written on much of today on the internet. We're misled into thinking that Parks just decided one day that she'd had enough and refused to give up her seat, and that the bus boycotts then spontaneously sprung into being after she had taken her solitary stand. In fact, the NAACP and others had been organizing for weeks and months beforehand, ready to spring into action with a boycott once the symbolic stand was taken. And they selected Rosa Parks in particular to be that symbol because they believed that she was the best candidate to see the ensuing court challenge through to the end. So while the Rosa Parks story of refusing to give up her seat on the bus to a white person is indeed one of individual courage and fortitude, it is also a story of the power of organizing. Sometimes our local organizing actions and their impact stay local, and then every once in a while, these actions gain widespread national significance. So it's great if we happen to become the next Rosa Parks, but the important thing is to keep doing our local organizing work. One final thought. Claiming our power is not just a political or social justice issue. Claiming our power is a moral and ethical and spiritual and religious issue. As Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. reminds us, what is needed is a realization that power without love is reckless and abusive, and that love without power is sentimental and anemic. Power at its best is love implementing the demands of justice, and justice at its best is power correcting everything that stands against love. We struggle with power sometimes in Unitarian Universalism, focusing on its shadow side, failing to remember that it can be used for good. But our seven principles call us to strive both for justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, and towards the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. Our church's mission statement calls us to be living justice. If we fall into the trap of only viewing power in the negative, if we succumb to the cultural norms in our country of not talking about power or how to use it successfully, if we don't claim our power individually and collectively, we are failing to live into our own beliefs and values. The principles don't say, speak loudly about the importance of justice and equity, but don't dare to use power to achieve those ends. Our mission statement doesn't say, hope for justice. It calls us to live justice. Part of living justice is becoming comfortable with and learning how to use power for good. Friends, may we get comfortable with, learn how to use more effectively, and claim our power. May you get comfortable with, learn how to use more effectively, and claim your power. Let's use power for good to make a difference, to make our communities in this country a better place. Power is not a dirty word. Amen.